Like to bring this meeting of House State Affairs together, and it is April 20th, 2006, and it is about 8:07 in the morning. And present, we have Representative Elkins, Representative Gatto, Representative Gardner, Chair Seaton, and wanted to remind everybody about their cell phones to mute them in case any of us have forgotten. Whoops. And then today we have an overview with the Division of Elections until about 9 o'clock. And then we'll have a confirmation hearing on Ms. Claire Hall to the Alaska Public Offices Commission. So if we need to run over, we're getting started a little late. If we need to run over a little, that would be fine as well on the demonstration. And this is an overview on the electronic voting process and the verification of the new machines. And so if we could get the division come forward and identify themselves for the record. Good morning.
Good morning. For the record, my name is Whitney Brewster, Director for the Division of Elections. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, for the opportunity to address the House State Affairs Committee on Electronic Voting, and particularly the use of the touchscreen machines in the upcoming primary and general elections. Also from the division, here is Ellen Kelly. She is our Help America Vote Act systems manager, and she will actually be walking us through the demonstration. And also online, I believe we have online Shelley Groudon, and she is our Region 3 election supervisor. I also appreciate the opportunity to address this committee at this time, as the division is currently developing its procedures on how we are going to be implementing the touchscreen machines. And this will give us enough time to have feedback so that we can have them ready before the August 22nd primary. Like I said, the division is currently developing its procedures, and we're planning on having them finalized before adjournment. And so I would like to provide the committee a copy of those procedures when they're finalized. With that, I'll jump right in. In my presentation, I'm going to give a brief background on electronic voting. Then what occurs before the election, what occurs on election day, and that's where we're actually going to be using the machines, and then go into what happens after election day. Per my discussion with Representative Seaton, there's a lot of information to cover, and I'm going to be going in chronological order, so I will likely or hopefully end up answering a question that might come up by the end of the presentation. So if you could please hold your questions to the end of the presentation, except for when we're actually voting. Please, I encourage you to ask questions then when we're up and actually participating in the voting process. Alaska's current system. The state has used the Diebold Global Election Management System and the AccuVote optical scan machines to collect and tally votes since 1998. This system has gone through 5 recounts, and which have proven the accuracy of the machines. One of those was in 2004. It was a U.S. Senate race, a statewide recount where every ballot was counted again. And those recounts have verified the accuracy of Alaska's current system. This system is also used by various local jurisdictions, including most recently the municipality of Anchorage. I want to briefly touch on something that has been a hot topic in the press, and that is the focus on the 2004 general election results. The division is now in litigation, so I can't really go into the specifics of the lawsuit or anything like that, but I can talk about what the basis for the attention has been. And it's a very complicated matter, and I'll try to make it as clear as I can. There are two reports generated and on election day. That is the statement of votes cast report, and that there is the summary report. They look like this. The summary is the total counts. The statement of votes cast report shows a breakdown of those results.
Do you have copies of that?
I don't.
Okay, we can get them later.
Yes, I'll be happy to provide those. They're also on the Division of Elections website. Like I said, the statement of votes cast is the breakdown of the summary. The reason the statement of votes cast report total is different than the statewide summary is that it totaled early voters by region for the top four races and ballot measures in each district. In other words, for let's say the U.S. presidential race, if you voted your early vote, that vote was included with all of the other early votes for that region, rather than being shown as an early vote for, let's say, House District 5. The districts in Region 1, those are House Districts 1 through 5 and 33 through 36. The Region 1 early voting results reported as R1 in each of those House districts. The early voting results are only reported once in the summary. However, in the statement of votes cast report, the results for each House district are skewed because that regional total is listed in each of those House districts. These regional numbers are correct, but they are, like I said, throughout the report listed in each House district as a regional result, and makes the report extremely difficult to read. And let me tell you why the reports showed that way. The 2004 election, in that election, the division programmed the early voting memory cards by region. And staff was unaware that by creating the memory cards in that fashion would prohibit the individual vote totals for U.S. President, U.S. Senate, and state Senate candidates and ballot measures to be broken down by individual House district. The vote totals for each region appears on each individual district's report for the districts in the region. This was not a software problem. This was not a hardware problem. This was a Division of Elections oversight. The staff was not aware that by programming the cards in that fashion that those results would not be able to be broken down further than by region.
So just for clarification, such as in Region 1, if you had House Districts 1 through 5, mm-hmm. and this only applies to the early voting, so
right.
let's say we had 600 people voted early,
right.
that those 600 votes for those statewide races would appear in a report for House District 1,
right.
it would also appear in the report for House District 2,
correct.
3, 4, and 5.
Right.
And that's the statement of vote cast.
Right.
And just clarification, is it the summary report is what's used for the official?
The summary count. Report.
So the summary report is the official?
Yes.
Vote. Okay, thank you.
Sure. During the 2004 election, the division implemented a new process for early voting. What was done in the past is, for instance, in 2002, the individual would go to the early voting site vote the ballot and place it in an absentee voting envelope and placed in the box to be counted after the polls close on Election Day, after the election. Whereas in 2004, the individual was able to, if they were properly registered in the correct House district and they were in the correct region to early vote, because early vote was done at the regional offices, the individual will walk in. If they were properly registered, they would cast their ballot, and then they could scan it in at that very moment. That was the change in early voting. And so the programming of the memory cards for those regional offices in order to allow that instant vote combined the early votes for races higher than a House district. In House districts 16 through 32, some of the precincts show more than 100% voter turnout. This is because the state of Alaska held a special election for the municipality of Anchorage and concurrently with the general election. And in these districts 16 through 32, there were two ballots, a general election ballot and a municipality of Anchorage ballot. So the voter had potentially two ballots. The individual would scan both ballots in, and because the percentage of turnout is based upon the number of cards cast, the number of ballots cast, that number inflated. There's no way to trick the system into considering that one voter. So it counted two ballots and it inflated the percentage in those House districts.
Okay, and Representative Gardner?
Sorry, I'm dying to ask a question. Mm-hmm. I know she asked me to wait.
Well, we'll have some during this because this is a little different than our presentation.
Okay.
So go ahead.
So if you know how many municipal ballots were cast, you could deduct that number from the total, and then it should be correct?
If Shelley is online, I would like to defer that question to her.
Sure. Shelley, would you identify yourself? I can't quite read the name here. Would you identify your name, who you're representing, and go ahead. Did you hear the question?
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Shelley Groudon. I'm the election supervisor for Region 3 for the Division of Elections. And yes, that is correct. When you're looking at the statement of votes cast, there is no way, and we would not want to trick the AccuVote system into only counting one ballot of every two ballots that go through it. The program is such that every single ballot that goes through the AccuVote unit will tally that ballot as a card's cast. There is also a column on the statement of vote that shows, say for the U.S. president race, the times counted of ballots that went through the AccuVote unit that contained that race. So you can clearly see on our statement of votes cast the total number of ballots that went through the AccuVote unit for those districts that included both the state ballot and the municipal ballot. Then you can look just a few rows over, columns over, and look at the times counted for the U.S. presidential race, and you'll see the exact number of state ballots only that went through that AccuVote system. But with the Global Election Management System software, there is no way the percentage turnout can be based strictly on just one ballot. It's based on any ballots that go through that unit.
So just a clarification, Ms. Groudon, then if you subtract the number of municipal ballots that were cast from the total, you do end up with the number of ballots that were cast for statewide race. Is that correct?
That's absolutely correct.
Okay, fine. Thank you. And Representative Gatto has a question.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. How do you know, or how does the machine know, that a ballot was a municipal ballot or a ballot was a statewide ballot? Does it track those separately?
Yes, it does. Every ballot style, just like all 40 House districts, every ballot style in the programming system has a unique card to it, a card number at the very bottom of the ballot. There is some programming on the very bottom of the ballot that identifies exactly what ballot style and what card that was, and that's what drives all these different reports. And so we can see that the municipal ballot was clearly a completely different ballot style card number for those districts to identify exactly the number of those that went through versus the number of state ballots that went through. There's unique codes on the bottom of every single ballot card that is created of a ballot style.
And let's see, Whitney, is this information either in a written form or is it on your website, the explanation
Mr.
for this?
Mr. Chairman, it is on our website under the results for the 2004 general election.
Okay, so is that the information or also an explanation?
Also an explanation.
There's also an explanation of how this went. So those summary cards can be looked at on your website. Or is a summary ballots available there? Okay. So thank you very much for that explanation of where we are, except that I had one other question. Mm-hmm. What happened in 2006? What procedures were used?
Right.
I don't want to anticipate this, but on this particular point, have we gotten rid of the regional election problem?
Yes, sir. I just want to go back a little bit. Just the results of the 2004 general election were, I just want to make sure that you all are aware of this, that all of those ballots were counted again in the U.S. Senate race, and that that recount confirmed the election results reported and certified by the State Review Board, the original results reported. So the 2004 general election results are accurate. The division is looking at ways, obviously, to improve the reporting for this year. We will also be reaching out to interested political groups, parties, individuals to explain how to read the reports, because if you can't read the reports, what's the point of having them available to the public to look at? If you can't read the reports, there's a problem. So we'll be reaching out to all sorts of groups and individuals to explain how to read those reports. Also, we have already taken into account the concerns and the comments by the Alaska Democratic Party as well as the Republican National Committee for the upcoming elections.
The question was, again, early voting, is that going to be handled on an individual House district basis?
Yes, sir, it will be.
So those will be scanned in at the night or afterwards, or are those...
That is unclear at this time if we're going to go ahead and allow the early voting to happen at the time. If there is enough room on the memory card to allow all House districts to be shown, if we can do that and accommodate the individual by allowing them to scan it in at that time, we will do that. But if we cannot... we will count the early votes as we did in 2002. We will not have a repeat of the grouping of early votes like what happened in 2004.
Great, thanks. Okay, we have one. Representative Gatto.
In 2004, we certified the election. I guess everybody's here because they were certified, and you mentioned they were counted again. And they were optical scanners and paper ballots and whatnot. When you say the results don't change, that's believable, but did the vote count change when you do a visual count, holding up or hanging chads if those were the issues, mm-hmm. or reading a filled-in circle, compared to the optical scanner that we were using back then, or are they exactly correct?
Through the chair, Representative Gatto, there was a change of 0.3%, and that was due primarily to the requirement of the division to count in a recount those ballots, those absentee by mail ballots that came in after Election Day. So there was a 0.3% change between those results.
And so, and that was entirely made up of those additional ballots that came in. I mean, or was there a discrepancy between the hand counting of ballots and the machines? I mean, was that pretty much right on, or do you know what that number was?
I'm sorry, that's probably available on
the website. Okay.
Representative
Lynn?
What did the 0.3% come to in the terms of real, of actual votes?
Depends on the race.
And Whitney, I believe the recount was just the senatorial race, right?
It was just the U.S. Senate race.
Well, whatever, what?
Through the chair, Representative Lynn, I would ask if I could defer that to Shelley, if she might know that. She was around. She was working for the Division of Elections at that time, and I was not. So.
Sure. We'll do that. Shelley, are you online?
I am. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Through the chair, the difference between the actual certified election results and the vote difference of the certified recount results are posted on our website. And as Whitney indicated, there was a difference of 0.3% between the certified results and the recount results. And that is not unusual in a recount. The state has conducted numerous recounts. The process for the 2004 recount was the same as we've followed in all the other recounts that we have conducted. There, as Whitney indicated, the difference is attributable to those absentee ballots that we received after the election requirement date, but postmarked in on or before Election Day. And according to state law, we can count those ballots in a recount. There was one other reason for results to be changed, and that is at Election Day, when voters go in and they mark their ballot, they are instructed to completely fill in the oval. And there are instances where a voter will marginally mark the ballot, maybe just make one little dot in it. And so during a recount, the recount boards are instructed that, and it is the division's policy, if for any reason in that race that mark cannot be detected, then with the Attorney General's office, with the recount observers, the Director of Elections physically has that ballot and looks at it and makes a determination if the voter's intent was clear. And there were some of those marginally marked ballots that the optical scan unit could not read the mark on Election Day, but in the recount, the voter's intent was clear, and we then counted the vote in that race with that.
Okay. And thanks. And Representative Lynn?
But the 0.3%, what number, how many votes was there, not in terms of percentage, with actual votes. Do you have any idea?
450.
That is posted. Both results are posted on our website. I would have to pull off if you're looking for the exact number, we can get that to you.
Yeah. And that's fine. We need to get on with our demonstration. I think that what we've got is we raised some questions here, and we can go to people have further questions. Let's have them go to the website, and then Whitney, you're available for personal
yes,
calls at your office for anybody that has questions on how that was conducted. So we need to get on with our presentation here about the system that we're going to be looking at. So thank you for that update, though, because there's a lot of clarification that needs to be made for everybody so we understand what's happening.
Yes.
Thanks.
Thank you. And I also want to make it clear, because there has been some misstatements in the media that touchscreens were somehow involved in that issue. Touchscreens were not used anywhere statewide in the 2004 general election. So I just want to say that out loud.
I think the legislature had said that until you have the paper backup, you couldn't
Correct.
Use the machines that
Correct.
You even that you had in your possession. So.
Yes, sir.
Appreciate it.
There will be a change to elections statewide due to federal law changes and state law changes. The Help America Vote Act of 2002 requires that in each polling place there be a voting unit accessible to the visually impaired and disabled voters. HB 320, which passed the legislature in 2002, directed the Division of Elections to provide balloting equipment to the visually impaired and disabled voters so that they would have an opportunity to vote an independent ballot. And then, more specifically, in HB 459, which passed in 2004, which many of you are very aware of, that legislation required the voting units to be capable of providing a paper record that could be reviewed and corrected at the time the voter was going to cast their ballot, as well as have that paper ballot, that paper receipt, be available for a recount. HB 94, which this committee is very familiar with, also directs the Division of Elections to do a hand count in one precinct in each of the 40 House districts before the certification of an election. That will be new this year. And although this does not directly relate to electronic voting, it does allow for one additional check. And I'll get more into this check a little bit later in my presentation. HB 94 also allows for the director to approve a voting system and software that is certified by the Federal Election Commission. The touchscreen units that the state has purchased were chosen because they meet the requirements of the Help America Vote Act as well as state law. They have also been certified with all of their components by the Federal Election Commission. Certification of voting systems and software, what that means by the Federal Election Commission is that system meets certain functional requirements, performance characteristics, documentation requirements, and test evaluation criteria. These units are also compatible with our current system, which has also been certified by the Federal Election Commission. The touchscreen machines are intended for the visually impaired and disabled community. However, no voter will be discouraged or disallowed from using the machines if they would like to. The Division of Elections is planning to hold demonstrations across the state for the blind and disabled communities so that they can become familiar with the machine, so we can get their feedback, particularly on how to train our poll workers to best assist them in using the machines. There will also be a poster, much like the instructions that I believe that you have in front of you. Obviously, the poster will be a little bit larger, by the unit to show the voter how to use the machines. And this is a draft, but I did want you to see those instructions. Additionally, there will be a great deal of training, additional training devoted to training poll workers on how to assist voters in using these machines. The state has purchased 505 of these touchscreen units. These machines will not be replacing Alaska's current system. The optical scan and the paper ballot in those hand count precincts will still be available. There will be one touchscreen unit per state law in each of Alaska's 439 polling places. These units were purchased using Help America Vote Act funds. And the cost of these units, the unit alone is $3,150. Like I said, that does not include all of the components. Each unit is equipped with a printer to allow for a voter verifiable paper trail, and that component adds an additional $350 to the unit. I now want to switch into election mode, election preparation mode, and I'll be talking about the security and testing done before the election. The security and testing process is designed in such a way that no single group or person can tamper with the results or the system. The state of Alaska uses an in-state printer for the to produce the ballot, not the AccuVote software vendor. So a company in Homer produces the ballots. Each touchscreen machine, like I said, is equipped with a printer to produce a paper ballot. The voter will have the ability to review that ballot. What will happen is that the paper, what the voter has chosen, will be printed out on that paper. The voter then has the ability to look at that, review it, see if it's accurate. If that's how they intended to vote, they say cast the ballot, and then it scrolls up to the into the machine. If they say, wait a second, you know, I didn't intend to vote for that person, they can at that time reject or cancel their ballot and start again on the voting machine, or choose to not vote on the machine and choose another option available for voting in the polling place. Each optical scan and touchscreen machine uses a memory card. That memory card is programmed by a Division of Elections employee. At no time during the programming of those memory cards is the optical scan or touchscreen memory cards, is the unit connected to the internet or LAN. It is a standalone computer that programs those cards. Programming, as I said, is done in-house by the Division of Elections. Once the memory cards are programmed, a bipartisan state review board then tests those cards. And like I said, during that testing, at no time is that unit attached to the internet or to the LAN. The test results are then printed from both the optical scan and the touchscreen machines, and then compared to the actual test ballots. Test ballots for the optical scan and the paper ballots produced by the touchscreen machines. So there's that comparison of the actual ballots to what that memory card is reporting. And that, of course, is to verify that it's reading correctly. Then those tested and certified memory cards are sent to the appropriate regional supervisors. In each region, a second test is done by a bipartisan regional AccuVote review board. They run another test of the memory cards used by the state review board and verifies that the results match those results certified by the state review board. And then each optical scan and each touch screen unit also undergoes a functionality test, the unit itself. goes through a functionality test within the regional offices. The board then seals the memory card into the unit, seals the number, records the seal number and the serial number of the units, and then they are ready to be sent to the polling place. The final test is completed on election day by the precinct board, I'm sorry, the election board, the bipartisan election board, and that precinct election board prints out a zero totals report on the unit to make sure that no ballots or results have been registered on the machine. Those zero totals reports are then secured into the unit. So that then brings us to election day. And I will now turn the time over to Ellen Kelly, who will be serving as your poll worker for today. I would like for complete committee participation, if you could come up and gather around the machines. I'd like for Representative Gardner and Gatto to be our Vanna Whites today.
Oh boy!
and for this,
I'm visually impaired. I can get my glasses.
For the sake of time, we're going to do the sided ballot, but we have the machines available after the meeting to vote the audio. It just takes a little bit longer, and for the sake of time, we'll just be doing the visual, if that's okay with you, Mr. Chairman.
That's fine.
Okay.
Is everybody going to vote for me?
Are you running?
You're not on my ballot.
For the record, I'm Ellen Kelly. I'm a systems manager for the Division of Elections, and I'll be acting as poll worker today.
Okay, just a second. We're going to have to make sure how we're going to do this with the audience. Is this going to work if we just go ahead?
Speak loudly and clearly. Does that work?
Why doesn't she introduce herself?
Yeah, why don't you come over and introduce yourself for the record?
Okay. For the record, my name is Ellen Kelly. I'm a HAPA Systems Manager with the Division of Elections. And we'll assume that you've already signed the register and you're ready to vote. Poll worker will present you with a voter access card.
This is the visually impaired one, right?
Yes.
If I can't see it.
No.
Well,
no, that is not the visually impaired card. That's a sighted.
Oh, right. No, if you were unable to see at all, you would use the audio ballot.
Okay.
Which has no screen at all. It uses the touch screen.
Okay,
here,
so I'm
headphones.
Using this as a
sighted. As a sighted person,
I'm just using this.
Right.
Yeah.
But we can
so
also. Right. You can also have a large font. Ballot, so you can see it better, or a high contrast.
Is this card unique to me, or is this card that simply does each person get the same card?
Each person gets the same programming on the card for the correct ballot.
Okay.
It does not hold any information that has to do with you. It doesn't hold. It doesn't record
your
votes.
This is a function of where I'm registered to vote.
Right.
Great, he's ahead of me.
Wonderful.
I'm
going with English.
And then start.
Chinese.
I'm going with large text also.
Okay.
And?
You can also try the high contrast.
Touch the
like
box next to the candidate's name. But I don't see that yet. Okay.
Again, the posters will be up in front of in addition to the instructions that are going to be on the screen,
mm-hmm.
Posted.
Oh, in front here?
Right.
Oh, so you can view the
master
data.
Right.
Okay. All right. So I'm going to join
you.
Nice. Okay. Commissioner of National Pastimes.
Hmm. If you'd like to change your vote, if you accidentally touch the wrong person, you simply touch it again and then touch the person you really want to vote for.
Okay.
The
That one you can vote for, too.
Oh, there you go.
Right, otherwise it won't work. You can try that on that.
So once you've actually voted for two, all the other X's disappear.
Don't vote for one of the people on the ballot.
Okay, so as soon as I do, or nine back.
Right, but if you decide to take that.
I can do that. Write it. Okay. Go ahead.
Oh, that's great, yeah.
Musical comedy. I think they had the musical comedy at the skits there for 6 years, so.
Okay, now it's summary time.
All right, and now?
Touch the print ballot to verify. Print ballot.
Show here.
Okay, close.
And there where you're showing up in red, because you were able to vote for two.
Oh, and I voted for nobody?
At this point, if you'd like to reject it. And go back to that.
Uh-huh, okay. Back to.
Just touch on it.
So the printed form stays in the machine?
Yes. You voted two.
Printed, that's written document backup.
Exactly.
That serves as the official ballot, that printed ballot.
Shows what's on the screen at the same time, so you can compare it right then.
And when somebody rejects it?
Recount calendar screen.
Does it, right, reject right on the?
It goes into the security canister inside the machine.
Think I got it.
Yeah, this is interesting because I had one that's rejected, okay, right?
And now it's starting.
And you can reject a ballot twice.
Right.
And if you reject more than twice, then it locks up and says, go get the other kind of ballot.
The third time it will either print your ballot or it won't cancel.
Card won't come out until.
And yes, that's correct. And you cannot then turn around and stick that back in. Try to stick it back. Stick the voter card back in. It won't allow you.
You get it back, you have to put it in a device that erases something.
It's erased now, actually. There's nothing on it at this point.
So when you're at the polling place, are they going to have a stack of cards, voter cards?
They will have.
And so when this is used once, it's put in a recycle pile that can't be used again, or do you?
It's actually re-encoded.
Okay, you can re.
A decoder with the ballot information.
There will be approximately 10 of those in each poll.
Okay.
And the voter will then be required to return that vote.
So this is a ballot card, not a voter card, right?
Yeah.
It has nothing to do with the voter.
Okay, and then the printout that I can verify stays in the machine, and that is a paper trail, should it be needed.
And there's no identification.
It's very much like a hotel.
Good luck, I hope you win.
Well, thank you for your vote.
Like I said, that is actually the official vote. That paper ballot is the official ballot, and that's what will be used in the hand count that the division will be required to do this year.
Good.
Okay.
Does anybody, while we're at the machines, have any other questions on UCW?
$3,500 include the stand?
Yes.
Yes.
I guess the other portion is that anybody can come back later to try the audio individual.
Now, as I recall, we don't have one of these for each polling place, because partly because some of them are so small.
We will have them in every polling place. And there has been some questions raised as to how are you going to protect the secrecy of the ballot in some of the smaller polling places where maybe only a handful of people might be voting on these machines. And that is a very good question, because there is no number assigned to each of those ballot printouts. Mm-hmm. However, they roll up in the order that the voter uses in this machine. So what we are going to encourage our poll workers to do, that if they haven't voted, to vote the machines intermittently through the day, to also use the machines.
Uh-huh.
And also there will be poll watchers there. There will be poll watchers, observers in the polling place.
Let's go back and get.
If you don't have other questions about the machine, then I can pick it up on the.
Yeah.
Okay.
And we'll get back with that.
Well, thank you for that demonstration of the machine, and we were just having the conversation about let's start that again so that it's on the record as far as possible identification of voters with a sequential trail. I mean, it's going to be like a cash register roll, I believe. Is that correct?
Yes. Through the chair, Representative Gardner, to answer your question, there will be one of these machines in every polling place, including the smaller precincts. And the question has been raised to the division, how are we going to protect the secret ballot if there are only a handful of the voters using the touchscreen machine? And my response is that's a valid concern. And also that what we're going to be doing is to encourage our poll workers to vote that machine to allow for additional votes, if they're eligible to vote in that, to allow them to vote that machine so that there are more votes and more voters using the machine. There will also be observers allowed in the polling place, and if at any time it appears that someone is tracking how the machine is being used, those observers can watch for that as well. There's no place that the division assigns a number or designates a ballot to a voter during the voting process. There is no number associated with that paper ballot printed on the machine.
Okay, and just back up for a moment. I had asked the division for a breakdown in how they would handle this, because even in a large precinct, if you have only, let's say you have a large precinct but you only have 17 or 20 people vote, and there's a sequential tape of how those ballots are, that was a concern. And so, you know, if there's a poll watcher, which is perfectly legal, mm-hmm. and proper, and they are seeing how many people in what sequence go into a voting booth, and then there is a challenge, and that tape is reviewed by political parties and by everyone else who's reviewing that vote sequence, that could be problematic. So what I've asked the division to do is try and figure this out, and they're talking about having their people requesting that they vote intermittently so that you wouldn't know where those were. But also I've requested that they intermittently just go into the polling booth where the touch, if it's enclosed, where the touch screen is, so that people won't know who voted when. Uh-huh. And just so that we get away from any appearance of someone being able to know, okay, you voted number 3, and now I can tell how you voted when, if there's a manual recount. So if there were a number of people that went in, let's say there's a poll worker that went in 3 or 4 times during the day to this touchscreen machine, and the person that's observing doesn't know when they voted, all of a sudden the whole system of being able to track that falls apart. So just to clarify that. Let's see, do you want to go through more presentation yet, or can we ask questions
at
this time?
If there are demonstration questions.
On the demonstration, then we'll go through some more information.
When I voted, I was looking for a way to cheat.
And this is Representative.
Sorry, thank you. And I was looking for a way to cheat. And I didn't think I could cheat on the touch screen at all. I'm just curious about the card. If I were an IT genius, is there a way for me to copy the card prior to voting, or get the information off the card, go outside the booth, make 500 cards, hand them off to my buddy who will go in and vote 300 times in different places? Is it possible, I guess, to copy the card? Because what we're saying, it's like your hotel key. If it's like your hotel key, is there a way for me to cheat. And that's the only flaw. And I have to go now for a bill that I have up. So I just wanted to get that question in. And I don't need the answer. I just want to get it to you to consider the weakest link is the link we're looking at. So thank you.
And I think that the link that he's talking about is the little programmer that you're talking about. You have that, the little encoder that reactivates the key. And the question is, can somebody buy that encoder on the internet? And could somebody, this is a question, you know, and this is, you know, I'm sure, could somebody buy that and then take a card, take it in,
and not return it,
and duplicate the information?
And then have a card with a ballot on it to be used.
Yeah, and then have an encoder so that they could go in and vote and, you know, vote multiple times.
Mr. Chairman, this device, the encoder, could be purchased from a vendor. However, this is programmed by the Division of Elections with very specific information. That individual would have to have access to our global election management system computer. That is in a secured room, locked up.
Well, and our question is all the information on that electronic card that you just encoded so that somebody could take that card, that one right there, and stick it in the machine and download it into an encoder and then, you know, redo those. So this is a question I'm not expecting you to know the answer to, but following Representative Gatto's question is, that is the weak link that we see, and it may not be weak at all, but we just need you to get with Diebold, and we need to find out how specific the information is that's in there and whether there's any way to download off of the card into another encoder, and then have the ability to do that, because we want to make sure that that's not possible, as well as you do. So,
correct, Mr. Chairman. We'd be happy to address that specific question.
Great. It's going to take some research, I know, but that will, you know.
Right.
This is the whole purpose of this demonstration today, is for the committee that oversees elections to give you the, you know, raise red flags and look at advice. So, Representative Gardner.
Right. And in the same vein, if I just swiped the little coder in the card and watched Ellen to see how she renewed the card after I'd voted, and I could run around and go to all the precincts and vote again?
Through the chair, Representative Gardner, this will be around a poll worker's neck. This will have... what is that called?
A lanyard.
A lanyard. It will be on a lanyard around a poll worker's neck. It will be very difficult for someone to take this encoder.
Just follow. So there'll be two at each polling station, in case an encoder dies or does voting with these machines. I mean, you could always go back to the optical scan, but if this encoder dies, I think that means that the cards can't be renewed unless there's a second encoder, or we're going to only have one per booth, do you know?
That's correct. The card has to be, must be programmed with the encoder. I believe that some of our larger precincts will have two encoders, one as a backup. They are very reliable. The batteries last, I believe, 7 years. And so it's not a huge risk to lose one. And so the smaller precincts will just have one encoder. And if it were to fail, then we would go back to the optical scan machine, I believe.
Yeah, so the backup is our current voting system anyway. So
right. There's no risk of people not being able to vote.
Great. Does anybody else have any other questions on the physical setup on the machines? And I'm sure the reliability of all the paper trail has all been done. Do you start with a new roll of paper ballots, of the, what do you call it? I guess it's going to be the paper backup ballot each time. Is that all loaded in? I mean, nobody has to be reloading the cash register like we've all had happen to us. And
right. The spool of paper holds approximately between 140 and 180 ballots, depending on the length of the ballot, and also depending on the number of rejected ballots as well. It will have a fresh canister of paper in it. However, if there is a if the machine is very popular and a number of people want to use it, it will be required that that paper be replaced, and it will remain in the security canister and will be sealed and protected as a paper ballot would be.
And so the at the larger polling booths, then there'll be another, I guess it's a paper security canister or whatever, so that they will be able to replace those during the polling hour.
Yes, yes, sir. Okay.
Anything else?
Yes.
Does anyone else have any other questions on the functioning of the machines or any of these other items that we've been talking about?
Mr. Chairman, if I may add one more thing, just because this is a question that was raised by Representative Guttenberg when he came by to view the machines. What occurs when the paper runs out? Will that happen right in the middle of voting? And the answer is no. There is a warning screen that appears on the machine that will not allow voting until that canister has been replaced.
Okay, good.
All right. So, once the polls have closed, the election board then prints a results report on each of the machines before transmitting the results electronically via a telephone line or calling in the results to the appropriate Division of Elections regional office. This
what does that mean? We'll run a report.
It will run a results report where all of the votes went, how many votes each candidate received, how many ballots were cast on the machine, total ballots cast on the machine.
And is that printed out by the printer, or how is that done?
By the election worker. The election worker will have a what's called a supervisor card, which will be inserted, and the election will then be ended, and that report will be printed.
But I mean, this canister, it can be printed by this machine. So does that mean it's on the supervisor's card and they print it off of another machine? I mean, it can't be printed on the tape, is it?
It is printed on the tape.
Oh, it's printed on the tape, but you don't get a copy of that tape.
Two reports are run. One that remains with the tape, the other is placed with the memory card after the election and sealed in an envelope and sent to the state review board. And like I said, these reports will be printed prior to the machines ever being connected to upload the results, so that when the comparison is done by the state review board, they can look at what the machine was recording and what was uploaded to make sure that those results match. Before certifying the election, all materials, like I said, the reports will be returned to the state review board for inspection. This board conducts a thorough review of the precinct's materials to verify that the number of ballots that were cast at the precinct matches the number of votes who signed the register at the polls on election day. These materials are also compared, like I said, to the results uploaded to the Division of Elections website. Additionally, as a result of HB 94, the State Review Board will also be conducting a hand count of one precinct in each of the 40 House districts. And that precinct will be randomly selected, but it must comprise at least 5% of the total ballots cast in that House district. For instance, I looked at your representative seat in your district, House District 35. I looked at the 2004 general election numbers, and it appears that 8,681 votes were cast in your House District. Looking at your precincts, your Homer number 1 precinct had 939 votes cast, which comprises 10.8% of the total votes cast in that House District. So that would be, that precinct would be eligible for the recount, for the random draw for the recount. However, your Seldovia precinct is 2.1%, 377. So that would not qualify for the hand count. So just to kind of give you a visual idea.
Good.
Of what we're looking at. If the results of that hand count are off by more than 1%, the entire House district will be hand counted. And there was some question as to 1%, HB 94 just says results. What are we talking about? Are we talking about total votes cast? Are we looking at totals, or are we looking at individual races? And what the division is planning to implement is that we're looking at both. We would look at the number of votes cast. We would be doing the hand count for each candidate and ballot measure, and then looking at what was reported by the election board on election day in that precinct. If any of those candidates or any of those ballot measures are off by 1% in that precinct, that the entire House district will be recounted. And I just think that that is probably the best way to address any concerns about the votes going where they were supposed to go, to the candidate that the voter indeed cast their ballot for. And then also we'll be looking at the totals. If the total votes cast in the precinct is off, or there's a discrepancy of more than 1% between that and the hand count, there will be a hand count of the entire House district.
Do you want to have questions on this point now as we go, or do you want to wait?
It's fine.
Okay, Representative Gardner.
Thank you. Given the 0.3% difference in a statewide race, it just seems to me now that a 1% in a district or precinct on any issue, a 1% discrepancy would indicate we have a serious problem. I mean, that's really a massive discrepancy, isn't it? I mean, given that things are so automated, it means that something's really wrong to get a 1% discrepancy.
If I may defer that question to Shelley Groudon, who has participated in
And before you do that, since you had my election up there, mm-hmm. what were some of the numbers from precincts, total number of votes, so we can per precinct?
I just have your information.
Yeah, that's
but
fine.
For Homer District 1 is 939. Homer number 2, I'm sorry, precinct number 2 is 852. Anchor Point 661. Bear Creek 654. Cooper Landing 159.
Okay, so we're running somewhere between 150 to 1,000 voters per precinct is what it's looking like.
In your House District.
In my House District. So 1% would be, in the smallest district, would be one person, would be two, because 1% would be 1.5, so that would be two vote different. And in the largest district, it would be 10 difference. A difference of 10 votes would be 1%. Is that?
Yes, sir.
That would be correct. So that's the discrepancy mm-hmm. level that we're talking about. Okay. And did we have a question for Shelley? I just wanted to make sure that we had some kind of number verification. Okay. Representative Gardner, did you have a...
No, I just want to say that the tolerances still should be very small, given that everything is automated and not generally touched by people. So it should be either right or not right.
And through the chair, Representative Gardner, this was the standard set by yeah. the legislature. So,
sure.
Right.
And just to for everybody's understanding, you know, I talked with the Division of Elections about this process because you could have one vote or one ballot that had three mistakes on it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And now is that, we want to find out, is that going to count as three mistakes or is that going to count as one ballot with a mistake? You could have a number of ballots with misreads on them, but not adding up to 10 for, if you had precincts of 1,000. None of them reaching 10 for that individual race, but you could have a number of ballots. So this is where we're trying to figure out how we make sure that, you know, this is a conversation that's taking place, and so I want the committee to think about it, and we'll get with the Division of Elections if we have any other questions. But those are the kind of criteria that we're trying to develop. What is the standard of rejection? Because we didn't say whether it would be 1% of the ballots cast would have some mistake on them. We were saying, you know, in an election, 1%, but we want to make sure that we look at it both ways. And I think that that's what you're getting at within the total.
Right, Mr. Chairman. That's why we would look at, we would hand count each individual race as well as ballot measure to make sure that the totals of each of those are matching what was reported in the precinct. And if those totals for the governor's race, for instance, is off by more than 1%, or any of those candidates or ballot measures is off by 1%, then the entire House district gets recounted. So we're not just looking at total votes cast,
mm-hmm.
you know, how many ballots were cast. We're looking at each individual race as well. So I think that covers the concern, and I think that was the intent of what you were doing with HB 94, is to make sure that, doing that check, to make sure that those votes are going where they were supposed to go.
Right.
So anyway, if we have any further thoughts, we'll get back to you individually on that. So go ahead.
All right. The paper ballots for the optical scan machines and the paper ballots on the touch screen machines, like I said, will serve as the official ballot for those hand counts. Once the State Review Board is confident that the results reported are accurate, they will then certify the election. And that is the end of my presentation, and I'd be happy to take any additional questions that the committee might have.
Good. Representative Gardner.
Thank you. There have been a lot of reports across the nation about problems with the Diebold system, and I don't, you know, have an opinion about whether they're justified or problems that have been resolved or not, but I am curious to know how this company was selected. Are there other companies that do comparable products? You know, what was the process?
There was, through the chair, Representative Gardner, there was a RFP process, and they all, the one of the requirements in the RFP was that the company had to be bonded.
Uh-huh.
They had to be a somewhat established company. And with that, they had to have they had to be bonded, and that was one of the criteria. I wasn't involved in the RFP process, so I would like to get back with you on more of that. But I do want to address the nationwide attention. There, a lot of the problems, some of the problems that other states have experienced, are due to the procedures that those states have in place to test the machines, to program the machines. And so since our procedures are different than those in other states, it's kind of difficult to compare apples to oranges in that respect. We do look at problems that other states are experiencing, and we are addressing them within our procedures to ensure that we don't have similar problems. But you can't really make the comparison because we have different procedures.
Follow up, Representative Gardner.
Thank you. And the primary difference is that we're doing our own coding.
Through the chair, Representative Gardner, we do our own coding. I don't know if other states allow for the vendor to do their programming.
Mm-hmm.
And perhaps Shelley might know that. She has been more involved on the federal level, if you don't mind.
Shelley, are you there?
Yes, through the chair. There are some jurisdictions that they do have vendors program their election, the same vendor prints their ballot, and the same vendor will troubleshoot their election for them and help with testing of those cards. And that has been an issue through just different security measures that the Election Assistance Commission has been looking at and best practices. Because when you put all your eggs in one basket like that, that jurisdiction then really gives up control of security over their elections. We have never in Alaska allowed that to happen with our election programming. It's always had division staff with bipartisan review boards doing the testing and a different vendor doing the printing.
Thank you.
And I had one question on the where it's programmed and tested in centrally here in Juneau, I guess, and then sent out to the regions,
mm-hmm.
And they retest them out there. If they find a problem, they can't reprogram them there, can they? They have to send back to Juneau for a reprogramming of card. Is that correct?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Just wanted to make sure. So they don't even have the equipment for reprogramming the memory card. That's only
correct.
Done here in Juneau.
Okay. Yes, sir.
Representative Gardner?
Sorry, it's another question, not a follow-up. were there other applicants when the RFP went out? Do you know or does Shelley know?
Ms. Groudon, were you involved in the RFP process at all? Do you know if we had multiple applicants for the RFPs?
Yes, through the chair. You almost have to back up way back to 1998 when the original RFP for the state's ballot counting system was issued. One of the reasons why the division chose also the Diebold system is that we have already invested in a ballot counting system for the state of Alaska that procedures had been established for and security measures in place, and that has been proven to accurately count ballots in Alaska. When looking at the purchase of touchscreen voting equipment to comply with HAVA, one of our requirements was that the system purchase had to work with and be compatible with the existing GEMS software that we use. And the reason for that is we did not want to have two different ballot tabulation systems in the state of Alaska that did not talk to each other, where staff would have to would have to take both sets of results and merge them together in a manual process. We wanted a system that the results would be 100% compatible with the existing ballot software that we use in the state. And with that, there was not any other vendors that their software is compatible with the GEM software.
And
so we would have had two different ballot systems that we would have had to manually merge together.
So and just to be clear, that's the AccuVote system that we've, optical scanners that we've been using, and the reports and the verification of that material. Is that correct?
That is correct, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, thanks. Follow-up, Representative Gardner.
Thank you. And the GEMS software, is that GMS?
Through the chair, Representative Gardner, that's GEMS, Global Election Management System.
Okay, and that's nothing to do with Diebold?
That is Diebold software.
That is Diebold software. So if
And Representative Gardner, I believe, see, just for clarification, that's the AccuVote system that we use. That is Diebold, and that's why they're able to be compatible. But go ahead with the follow-up, Representative Gardner.
Okay, so going back to my original question, when the RFP went out for the touchscreen voting to comply with HAVA, we were already using a Diebold system, so therefore Diebold kind of had a leg up because they would be compatible in a new choice.
Through the chair, Representative Gardner, like I said, I'd like to get back with you because I wasn't involved in the RFP process, and I'd be happy to answer your questions.
All right.
Sure. Okay, and we'll make that communication individually. Yes, Representative Grunberg. Oh, and before you start, I wanted to recognize that Representative Ramirez, Representative Grunberg have both been with us for a while, and I don't remember whether I recognized Representative Lynn was here as well. So we had a full committee this morning, and Representative Goddard just had to leave for a while. Representative Grunberg.
Ms. Brewster, I apologize, you may have answered this already. I know that certain companies have been under attack, charged with certain irregularities in other jurisdictions. And I'm not sure of the details of those, but I know that...
And Representative Grunberg, we did cover that. Representative Gardner has been asking the questions about this. So if it's going to be detailed at all...
No, it's not.
Okay.
No. Are you familiar with the general facts, generally, of what's been going on? I'm not going to go into details. I gather you're somewhat familiar a little bit?
Yeah, through the chair, yes, sir.
Okay. Would those activities be against the law in Alaska were those to occur here? Do we need to make any statutory changes to make certain that those activities, if proven against anyone, would be illegal in this state?
Through the chair, Representative Grunberg, I did briefly address this with Representative Gardner. There are procedures set up in various states, different security procedures and testing procedures in various states. And the security procedures in our state that the division is to implement and has implemented will not allow for some of the things that have happened.
That's not exactly where I'm going with.
Well, Representative Grunberg, we went over this with Ms. Groudon as well, and basically it's that those states are using vendors, whereas our state is keeping control of the system. But so since the committee has dealt with this, I'd like you to individually talk to the commission. So Representative Gardner.
Sorry, I have another question. Last year in the federal budget, there was $2 million to help states, Alaska, implement the HAVA requirements. Has that money been spent? Is it adequate to meet the needs? What are the costs that we're experiencing?
Certainly. Through the chair, Representative Gardner, the Division of Elections has approximately $16 million of Help America Vote Act funds.
Okay.
That is presently in an interest-yielding account. We are looking at other ways that we can improve elections. This is not the only thing that we're doing is implementing the touchscreens. We're also opening and have opened two satellite offices, one in the Mat-Su and one in Kenai, that function as a regional office to better serve voters in those rapidly growing areas. And we've also moved the absentee office from the director's office and made it a standalone office in Anchorage, which should improve the speed in which people receive their absentee ballots and the speed in which the division can process those. That has been a very popular method of voting, and I don't see that popularity dying. That is another way that we have been encouraged to by the Lieutenant Governor to spend those funds.
Uh-huh.
Okay. Follow-up, Representative Gardner.
Thank you.
Representative Gruber.
So would you say the Division of Elections has adequate funding to hire and train the staff and poll workers that we need to have to comply with these requirements? And
through the chair, Representative Gardner, yes. We have planned on bumping our training up by threefold in order to train poll workers adequately on how to use the how to use and to show others how to use the touchscreen machines. To answer your question specifically, yes, the Division of Elections has enough funding to make sure that our poll workers are trained properly.
Thank you.
Thank you. And Representative Gruenberg.
Thank you. Ms. Brewster, on a slightly different subject, not automated machines. As you know, the voters of Anchorage, in Anchorage recently turned down some school bonds. And they did this a couple of years ago, and as a result, the municipality held a special election at the same time and place as the general election. And I know that there was a bill associated with that to the municipality. Are you aware of whether, if this were to occur again, there would be ways of accomplishing this easily and cheaply so that we can keep the cost down?
Representative, through the chair, Representative Gruenberg, the state actually conducted the special election for the municipality in 2004. The State Division of Elections actually conducted the election. However, the municipality of Anchorage did reimburse the state for the costs of holding that special election. Through the chair, Representative Gruenberg, we will work with municipalities as much as possible to try to assist them in their elections. And if there are ways to cut down on costs by doing what the Division of Elections did in 2004, the Lieutenant Governor has advised us that we should continue to work with municipalities in that way.
Are there any legislative changes that would help you accomplish this?
Through the chair, Representative Gruenberg, not that I'm aware of. We have that ability right now.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. And we appreciate you you working with the municipalities as a division, because that's, you know, the best of both worlds is to get everything accurate and get it easily done. Let's see, does anyone else have any other questions? Representative Gardner.
I did. This isn't particularly related to these machines, but it's sort of an election question. If I live in, say, House District 24, and I work downtown, and maybe on my lunch hour I go out to a polling place and vote, I don't get a ballot that shows the District 24 candidates. I get whatever the ballot is at that place. Is there any way that we notify voters that they don't have the full ballot for their district if they vote in a different area?
Through the chair, Representative Gardner, there are areas. For instance, downtown, we had an early voting site where all of the ballots were available for all 40 House districts if someone was at work and couldn't get to their polling place, or wanted, it was just more convenient for them to vote at that location. We do advertise that on the Division of Elections website. We also do advertise that in the newspaper, to allow to make that announcement in the newspaper so that people are aware.
So, Representative Gardner.
Thank you. I mean, I understand that that the Division of Election does do those advertisements, but I think that a lot of people don't understand that if they don't vote within their own local district, mm-hmm. their vote, if they go, just happen to be, say, visiting somebody else and go in to vote in a different district, people don't understand that, A, the vote that they make in their out-of-district area for candidates that are local there won't count, and they don't have the opportunity to vote for their own. And I don't think that people generally understand that.
Through the chair, Representative Gardner, it is on their voter card, their precinct information, where they are to vote. If there are suggestions from the committee as to whether or how the division can better communicate with the public as to where they are supposed to vote or can vote, I'd be more than happy to listen to your suggestions.
Thank you.
And we worked on that quite a bit in the last round of election bills, so right. hopefully it gets better. Are there any other questions? I really appreciate the division coming in and spending this time with us and going over these, and you'll get back to us on those specific questions that we ask, and if you would share those with my office, we'll distribute it through the committee. But any committee member is perfectly not only entitled but encouraged to talk directly to the division about any suggestions or any questions on the machines, or if anybody wants to come in later and use the visually impaired, the hearing portion of the machines. These will be set up till 2 o'clock today here for staff throughout the building, or for other legislators or any member of the public, I presume.
Anyone who happens to be in the room.
And so we want to extend that invitation to the press and anyone else in the building or anybody that can come in.
The public can do it too?
Yeah, this is available to the public here today.
And Mr. Chairman, if there are individuals or constituents of yours who would like to vote the machines, they are welcome to go into any regional office to use the machines, mm-hmm. as long as they
Okay. And Representative Gardner?
Thank you. I have one other question. These machines that are specifically designed for disabled voters, has the Division of Elections talked with any groups that represent people with disabilities or?
Yeah. Through the chair, Representative Gardner, yes, the Division of Elections has spoken with the blind and disabled community. We will, mm-hmm. and we will also be doing demonstrations statewide, mm-hmm. Starting in June. Being specifically for the blind and disabled communities to use the machines and give us their feedback.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much. And seeing no other questions, again, thank you for coming in and sharing these with us. And we will be hearing from you and probably sending you suggestions.
Thank you. Sounds good. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, we'll now go to online. We have... Claire Hall, are you there, Claire?
Yes, I am. I'm right here.
Okay, just a minute. Let us turn the volume down here.
She's on her game pretty good.
Go ahead again.
This is Claire.
Okay, I can hear you. Would you give your full name for the record, and then would you go ahead and let us know a little bit about your background and why you'd like to be on the Alaska Public Offices Commission?
Full name is Claire Van Sciver Hall. My husband and I have been residents of the state of Alaska for about 16 years now, and have lived in Fairbanks the full time. My husband retired from active duty with the Army in 1996 and opened a law practice here. Up until that time, I had been teaching school. I taught out of state and then here at Monroe Catholic High School. In 1999, I joined him in his law practice, and I've been learning the ropes as a paralegal and office manager since that time. I'm interested in the Alaska Public Offices Commission because I think it's an important role that government plays in oversight. I've had much dealing with them when I was president of our Fairbanks Republican Women's Club. They sort of kept us honest, and so I'd be interested in playing a role and helping out with that sort of effort.
Good. Representative Ramirez.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Claire, good morning. It's Jay Ramirez. How are you?
Hi, Jay. I'm fine. How are you?
Good. Mr. Chairman, we've done quite a number of appointments throughout last year and this year, and it's not often that I know or can personally vouch for somebody. Sometimes I recognize the name, but it's not often that I know somebody. And so I just I'd like to say that I'm new to politics, to the the elected capacity, and of all the people that I've met, I have found Claire and her husband to be exemplary. They were just for an ingenue to the process, and I was an outsider. If every community has an inner circle, and it's hard to bust through the ranks. You know, it's our right, but sometimes it's hard to go through the front door because communities sometimes make a front door entrance. I'm trying to be tactful, Mr. Chairman, but I just want to I want to say that I found through the process that Claire demonstrated just an ethical integrity and an openness to may the best man win that was demonstrated to me in a wide open process with a pretty vertical climb for a guy like me, and I never have lost that impression of her, and I am familiar with APOC like everybody on this committee is, and the important scrutiny that they have to bring to decision making and to wearing a referee's uniform, and there's always an element of partisanship, I assume, to that a Republican governors nominate Republicans to open APOC appointments. But I'd like to be on the record and say that a person like Claire Hall is one of the most one of the fairest, most decent people that I have come across within that whole universe of Fairbanks people. And we don't seem to play flag football at Fairbanks. It looks like a contact sport. So I just want to say highest ethical praise for Claire and her manner. So thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you for that personal knowledge that you're bringing to the committee. Representative Grunberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Hall, what kind of law does your husband practice?
The general law practice. It tends to be about 50% family law, but we do a little corporate work and some contracts and a little bit of probate here and there. My husband was appointed the part-time federal magistrate judge for Fairbanks. He had that for a year, which takes him out of our law practice for about, I'd say, 30 to 40. So we've scaled down a little bit what we're doing here.
The reason I asked is by profession. I'm a family lawyer, and anytime we can get any family lawyer or family law paralegal who knows problems of people in that area into the public process, I think that's a great idea.
French warfare.
Yes, it is. I gather you went to UCLA.
Yes, I did.
And you graduated from there in history.
Yes, I did.
Well, I also went there to law school, so that's another good recommendation for you.
Go Bruins.
As I understand it, for the Public Offices Commission, there have to be some number of Democrats and some number of Republicans appointed. Isn't that correct?
That is correct, yes. I believe it's an even score, and I know there are five commissioners, two outward Democrats, two outward Republicans, and I'm not quite sure what the status of the fifth is.
I understand that you're filling a Republican seat?
I am.
Okay, and my only question, which I was chatting a moment ago to Representative Ramirez, is that you'll be fair to both sides of the aisle?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. Well, I'm kind of looking forward to withdrawing from Republican Party politics, which I have to do through taking this position. So, yeah, absolutely.
Well, good, and I know the staff there at APOC tries to do their very best, and they're very understaffed and underpaid, and anything that certainly I can do to help all of you folks on the commission, happy to do, and I know that we all feel that way around here. So,
thank you. Appreciate the kind words. Thank you.
Thank you for volunteering to serve.
Thank you. Does anyone else on the committee have any questions?
I had the same question as Representative Grunberg asked, so I don't need to do it again.
Very good. Okay. Seeing no other questions, we sure appreciate your willingness to serve. APOC is a very important commission for all of the public of Alaska so that they can verify that we are filling the ethical standards and the reporting standards that we should aspire to. So I'm happy to hear the personal recommendations from people in Fairbanks that that know you and are sure that you'll do a good job on that. So with that, I think we do we have a motion to...
Yes, I move we report the nomination to the floor.
Okay, we have a motion to report Claire Van Shiver Hall's nomination for seat on AFOC for confirmation hearing at a joint session of the legislature. Is there anyone opposed? Seeing no opposition, we will forward Ms. Hall's name for joint session confirmation, and appreciate the committees, and Ms. Hall, appreciate you staying online with us this morning through election things so that we could hear your qualifications. Thank you again. We have coming up next week on Tuesday, we have an executive session to talk about homeland security issues that could be that need to be kept quiet. I know there's some people from military and vet affairs here. There's also some people from, you know, that are concerned. All of us on state affairs are concerned. So what I'd like to do is find out if there are any particular issues that any committee member wishes to have, you know, anyone involved in the homeland security issues. We'll have both the general, Greg, I forgot his name.
Campbell.
General Campbell will be here, as well as we'll have folks from public safety and all. So, yeah, and Gardner.
I just wanted to ask, can staff be present at the executive session?
No. It'll be only representatives, and it'll be the committee will be hearing information that we want to have a very full and open conversation about plans, about contingencies, about things that we can't talk about in open session. So it'll be just members. Yes, Representative Grunberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a procedural thing. I know that when members of the legislature go into confidential settings, like in Ledge Council, we're dealing with an RFP, and I know that when they deal with oil and gas matters and litigation, a lot of times they have to sign a confidentiality agreement. I do not recall that being required on security matters, and I would ask the staff to check. I think it's a good idea. I think that if we do that as a matter of policy, there should be a form for us to sign. Number one, that shows the gravity of the situation, and number two, it is something that just reminds us of the confidentiality, and I think they should institute that, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, and we will check with Ledge Legal and find out the status of that, and appreciate that comment. There may be some areas that people want to communicate to me, you know, privately, about issues so that I can communicate them to our Homeland Security folks as additional, other than contingency plans and those kind of things that we want them to address. So I'd like to give them some lead time on other issues. So if there are particular issues, it is going to be most productive for us to let them know ahead of time. So
that'll be the whole session?
That'll be the whole session. Is there anything else to come before the committee at this time?
Mr. Sherman?
Yes, Representative Ramirez.
Are we going to take up public interest litigants in our remaining time?
Yes, we will take up that again. Not today.
Okay.
Okay, is there any further questions? Okay, seeing nothing, we'll be adjourned, and it is 9:45.